Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Phil Dierking, Susan Shand, Kelly Jean Kelly, and Mario Ritter. But first, this report.
Leaving home to attend a college or university often leads to big changes for a student. One of them can be leaving behind a pet cat, dog, or other beloved animal. Kimberly Brubaker says she feels emotionally connected to her two pets, a cat named Dino and a snake named Mars. If an animal is part of your entire life and caring for them is a huge part of it, to take that away is pretty dramatic, she told the Associated Press. So when Brubaker left home to attend Eckerd College in St. Petersburg, Florida, she brought her pets with her. And college officials gave her permission to live with them in a school-owned dormitory. In the United States, Eckerd is not the only school to accept pets in student housing, but it may have been one of the first to do so. Since the early 1970s, the college has accepted many kinds of animals. Brubaker has a student organization that registers on-campus pets. It makes sure the animals are well taken care of and that students follow Eckerd's pet policies. And it tries to solve any disputes. We do pet checks once a month. We go around and knock on all the doors, Brubaker said. The student group receives an average of one or two reports of a problem every month. But most issues are minor, such as misunderstandings of the rules governing pet registration.
Not only are the pets staying on Eckerd's college campus mostly problem-free, they may actually be helpful to their owners and other people. Miranda Goodman Wilson is an assistant professor of psychology at Eckerd. She recently helped write a study on the effect pets have on students. Goodman Wilson noted students reported their pets reduced their levels of stress and had incredibly favorable things to say about living with the animal. Also, a majority of students claimed that animals were a good influence on their educational performance. I think that for many students, having a pet provides a structure that they otherwise lack, Goodman Wilson noted. If you have a dog who has to go out to the bathroom, that's a powerful alarm clock right there. The results of her study were mixed when it came to measuring exactly how helpful pets were for the students' mental health. She found that pet-owning students did not have overall lower levels of stress, depression, and anxiety, or nervousness. But there was an effect when it came to somatic anxiety, the physical effects of stress, such as a sudden increase in heart rate. Among the pet owners, increased levels of stress did not result in increased somatic anxiety. It may be that they are serving as a buffer, said Goodman Winslow. So yes, I'm still having stress, but by having my animal, that stress is not translating into this sort of anxiety in the same way.
But while pets might be good for students, some might worry whether college life is good for the animal. Last year, McKenna Hooper decided to adopt a dog. Hooper remembers she wanted a small, older dog. A low-energy pet made sense so she could direct more attention on her studies at Johnson & Wales University in Denver, Colorado. Hooper remembers that when she contacted different pet adoption organizations, none of them liked the fact that we lived in a dorm. She eventually adopted Max, a 7-kilogram dog who is now 11 years old. It appears that he is living a good life. Hooper and the person with whom she shares a living space attend classes at different times and have different work schedules. So Max is rarely alone more than a few hours at a time. He also gets all the attention he could ever want in student housing. Everyone knows his name, Hooper noted. They know his name better than they know ours. Goodman Wilson believes that there can actually be good reasons for bringing your pet to school. The activities of college students can often change from one day to the next, and there are lots of people around them to look in on the pet. More so than your typical animal, there are ways for the wellness of the animal to be checked up on, she said. And I think students generally are around their animals more than your average working adults. If you are looking for an animal-friendly college or university, know that each school has different rules. There are more schools that accept animals kept in small containers than ones that permit dogs or cats. And where dogs are permitted, school officials may set limits on a dog's breed or size. Some colleges and universities limit pets to students who have been at the school for more than a year. Even Eckerd only accepts pets that lived with students before they started taking classes.
Goodman Wilson expects the number of pet-friendly schools to grow, partly because of the increase in emotional support animals in the United States. Their owners are required to carry a doctor's note stating that the person needs the animal to help them deal with a mental health condition. Once policies are in place for emotional support animals in student housing, this can open the door to permitting pets on school grounds in general. In a few weeks, Elizabethtown College in Elizabethtown, Pennsylvania, will open its first pet-friendly housing. The college's new policy grew out of increasing numbers of assistance animals and because of requests to raise service dogs. Allison Bridgman is an administrator with Elizabethtown College. She says that on-campus animals are now seen to have a more general value. We see this as part of creating a campus community that promotes well-being, she said. But it also seems clear that there will be more pet-friendly college campuses as long as students have anything to say about it. I answer emails all the time that say, "Hey, I'm trying to start a pet policy on campus. What are the first steps?" Kimberly Brubaker of Eckerd College said. I probably get at least one email a week from students at other colleges asking about our program. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Now, the VOA Learning English Program, Words and Their Stories. For many people, camping is a popular outdoor activity. Camping is for people who like to feel one with nature. They like sleeping, playing, eating and washing, or not washing, in the open air. In fact, they often like camping a lot more than staying at home. Camping is not always easy, but people who like camping like roughing it. In other words, they don't mind leaving their creature comforts at home. For example, they do not mind sleeping in a tent on the ground. They don't mind cooking and eating outside, or doing anything outside. But not everyone likes sleeping on the ground or washing up in a cold lake. Even people who like being out in nature may still like to get a good night's sleep on a soft, comfortable bed. For these types of people, glamping may be more appealing. Glamping combines two other words, glamour and camping. I have been camping, but I've never been glamping. My friend Lisa has. So I invited her into the studio to describe her glamping experience. Here is part of our conversation. What is glamping? How would you describe glamping?
Well, glamping is actually glamorous camping, right? So that's where glamping came from. So it's camping without all of the downsides.
Would you consider yourself a glamper? Have you glamped?
I have glamped.
We don't really use the word that way, do we?
No. I've never even heard someone say to glamp.
It's a new word.
It is a new word, I think. I have gone glamping, and we went to this fabulous resort with these yurts. It's a big, round, circular tent with, like, a wooden frame. But this particular yurt has underfloor heating and, like, a beautiful spa bathroom and a wood stove and fuzzy bathrobes hanging in the corner. What else do you need? And baskets of muffins delivered to your doorstep in the morning.
That does not sound like camping, but yet you are outside sleeping in a fabric enclosure, a yurt.
That's right.
Yeah, it would be hard to go back to camping once you've been glamping, I have to say.
Yes, I think that's very true. In fact, it may be possible that I have not been camping since I went glamping.
So, Lisa, if you're free this summer, how would you like to go camping with me?
I would much rather go glamping with you. How do you feel about glamping?
The way that you've described it, I could do glamping for a longer period of time than I could camping. I do like camping, but glamping sounds really awesome.
Glamping is fabulous. And if you're doing it right, there's a restaurant nearby, so you don't even have to cook.
Now, there is no reason you have to choose between camping and glamping. Perhaps you like to do both. You have your feet in both camps, so to speak. When you have your feet in both camps, you are supporting or are involved with competing sides, or at least two very different sides. Sometimes we use this expression when supporting both sides is a good thing. For example, let's say two friends of yours are having a big fight and they stop talking to each other. You, however, want to stay out of the conflict. So you talk with both of them. You keep your feet in both camps. But sometimes the expression carries with it the feeling that there is something dishonest going on. In other words, maybe a person is supporting both parties, but not saying so. I imagine that this happens in the world of politics quite a bit. But let's not end this words and their stories in politics. Let's go back to nature. Which camp are your feet in? Camping or glamping? I'm Anna Mateo. Special thanks to my friend Lisa for joining me on the program.
A restaurant named after Donald Trump is building a loyal following in the middle
of Russia. The restaurant has been growing in popularity in Siberia, its manager said on Wednesday. He spoke at a time of increased Russian interest in the U.S. president after his meetings this week with Vladimir Putin. Trump Burger opened in the city of Krasnoyarsk last December. The restaurant is now trying to use all the talk about the U.S. leader to expand its business. Trump spoke of wanting to improve ties between the countries during his talks on Monday in Helsinki with President Putin. The walls of the eatery are covered with paintings of the U.S. president. The food it offers includes such choices as a Trump burger with bacon and a Melania chicken burger named after Melania Trump, the president's wife. Demand is really not bad for a restaurant that opened just recently, manager Igor Vinogradov told the Reuters news agency. He noted that some customers drink too much alcohol and have no great liking for the United States. They sometimes are critical of the restaurant's theme and have demonstrated rowdy behavior, he added. There were celebrations in Russia after Trump won the U.S. presidential election in 2016. As a candidate, Trump had called for improved relations with Russia and praised Putin. At Monday's summit meeting, Trump shocked the world by questioning the findings of U.S. intelligence agencies that Russia had interfered in the 2016 elections. Trump also praised Putin's strong and powerful claim that Russia was not involved in the vote. I'm Phil Dierking.
The burned remains of bread made about 14,500 years ago in northeastern Jordan have given scientists a surprise. Humans started making bread long before they developed agriculture. The bread was found in a stone fireplace at an ancient site in Jordan's Black Desert. It is the oldest bread ever found. Researchers said this week that the discovery shows that hunter-gatherers in the eastern Mediterranean learned to make bread more than 4,000 years before farming began. That is much earlier than scientists had thought. The bread was made from wild cereals like barley and oats, as well as tubers. It was made by a group of people called the Natufians. At the time, they had started to change from a nomadic way of life to one in which they stayed in one place. Amaya Arans Otegui was a lead writer and researcher of the study. She is a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark. She called the bread discovery exceptional. Arans Otegui said scientists must now consider whether there was a relationship between bread production and the beginning of agriculture. She added that the desire for bread may have led nomadic people to start growing food and staying in one area. She also said the researchers have begun the process of trying to reproduce the prehistoric bread. The bread might not have been very tasty, Aranz Otugui said. She described the taste of the tubers used for the flour as quite gritty and salty, but it is a bit sweet as well. The next oldest bread ever discovered was found in Turkey. It was over 9,000 years old. I'm Susan Shan.
More than 500,000 Rohingya from Myanmar are in refugee camps in Bangladesh. The people, a Muslim minority in Myanmar, fled the military's campaign of violence against them. Now they face another threat: monsoon rains. The intensity and speed of the rain cause landslides and serious flooding in the camps. The problem is made worse because many refugees take shelter on hills. But trees no longer hold the soil in place. They have been cut down to clear space and provide wood for shelters. The roots have been cut for firewood. When the rains come, the water turns the soil into heavy mud that slides down the hill and covers anything in its way. One man, named Muhammad Alam, was asleep in his shelter last month when mud slid through the plastic wall beside him. A tree root cut his head. In another slide, a 60-year-old woman was buried to the top of her legs in mud. One child has already died as a result of heavy rains, and 30 more people have been injured, says the group that oversees aid workers in the camp. The Inter-Sector Coordination Group, or ISCG, also says that more than 200,000 people are living in areas believed to be in danger of landslides and flooding. The most intense rain is expected over the next few months. Officials have been able to clear some land in the camp and make it flat, but the area does not have enough space for everyone. About 34,000 people have moved to new shelters farther away. However, many now struggle to find firewood because they live far from the mountains, and they do not have money for travel to the markets. Muhammad Alam, marked from the cut on his head, is currently living in a one-room schoolhouse with 12 other people. He says he is hoping officials will help build him a new shelter, but he says he has no idea how long that will take. However, Alam notes that the Rohingya refugees have faced threats more serious than rain, including mass killings, rapes, and other abuse at the hands of soldiers in Myanmar. He said, "Here, even if there's a landslide, at least we don't have to worry about the military." I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
The Global Slavery Index estimates that more than 40 million people around the world were subject to conditions similar to slavery. The report said North Korea and Eritrea had the highest percentages in the world of what it calls modern slavery. The numbers for the report come from 2016. The study defines modern slavery as human trafficking, forced labor, or debt bondage. The report also considers forced marriage and the sale and exploitation of children as modern slavery. The Walk Free Foundation, based in Australia, has published the study since 2013. India has the highest total number, 8 million people believed to work under slave-like conditions. And North Korea has the highest percentage. 1 in 10 people in North Korea are considered modern slaves, with the clear majority forced to work by the state. For example, North Korea has used foreign workers to earn money for the government under harsh conditions. The researchers for the study spoke to 50 defectors from North Korea. Overall, 2.6 million people in North Korea live in modern slavery conditions, the study said. The goal of the index is to pressure governments and companies to do more to end the problem of modern slavery. The Walk Free Foundation also wants more information about the real number of people affected by the problem. The responsibility for modern slavery conditions, the report says, lies with developed nations because they import $350 billion worth of goods from developing countries. These goods, it says, are produced under questionable conditions. Products that could be linked to the use of slave labor include coal, coca, cotton, wood, and fish. The report said two problems permit modern slavery to continue. They are repressive governments that use forced labor for support, and conflicts that cause a breakdown in the rule of law. The report recommends that governments and businesses take action by making human rights a top issue in dealing with repressive nations. After North Korea and Eritrea, the study found Burundi, the Central African Republic, Afghanistan, and Mauritania also had high levels of slavery. South Sudan, Pakistan, Cambodia, and Iran were also near the top of the list. I'm Mario Ritter.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.